With Peter Lynham. Are you there, Peter?
I am here, yes indeed.
Let me just chuck a little professor on there as well. Just
my goodness.
Slight upgrade. You put the work in, mate, that's what you get. Hey, how are you, Peter? You good?
I'm very well, thank you. All the better for the conversion therapy decision on Friday, I'd have to say.
Right, yeah, fair enough. Glad you finished that sentence. I was wondering where that was headed. Is there any statistics around the world that this is a good thing that could potentially work? Let's just get that right out the gate. Let's ask that crazy question.
Yes, Queensland and Canada, and to some extent Victoria, Australia, their legislation seems to have had a positive effect in at least driving such practices underground.
Right,
so
right.
I think that's good.
Oh, no, I meant like coming from a maniac point of view, does the conversion therapy even work? Is it something that you can actually, the human body like, or mind pliable enough to the point where I guess you could just brainwash someone to what you think is right or wrong?
Well, of course, this goes back to the issue of how is our sexuality shaped? Mm. Because, there's always been a debate in the LGBT circles anyway, to what extent does nurture and to what extent does nature determine what our sexuality is?
Right.
And I think, both seem to have a component in the shaping of who we are. And certainly in terms of... Well, because a lot of people will not admit that they're lesbian or gay unless they have actually made a decision that they're going to be openly that.
Right.
People are not going to say, I'm struggling, unless they see it in a negative way and want to be cured.
Mm.
And what is cure? Now, I tell you, there are some stories, interesting stories, of people, and I know a few. One person actually visited me one day, made a special trip to Auckland, to tell me that I was going to hell and that they had been cured of their homosexual tendencies.
Mm.
An interesting meeting, I'd have to say. I knew that person at that stage very well, since then we've not had a lot of contact, as you can imagine. But I would say that person still very evidently had an element of homosexual identity. But, I think it's very obvious in history that a lot of people who doubtless were interested in same-sex, they were same-sex attracted, but they entered marriages and reasonably successful marriages.
Mm, right.
Plenty of them in history.
Getting on with life, trying to fit in your little weird little community.
Yes, and so, very often there's a bit of homosexual practice on the side.
Right.
But it's kept out of sight publicly, and indeed in some societies we know that was thought perfectly okay. Ancient Greek society, for example, wasn't a problem.
Is it, because this is where I kind of want to get to, I'm just interested in the history, and because obviously homosexuality has been around since the dawn of time, I'd assume. The conversion, is that the people that are doing it, do they assume that that there's some kind of disease in the brain or something? Like, is that what they're actually... Is that where they're coming from?
Yes, so there's two versions of this approach.
Right.
One says that nurture, and it usually goes back to the strong person is from the other sex, you see, so that a strong mother figure in the gay person is supposed to produce a gay personality. The strong male bonding with the father for a woman may produce lesbianism, so the story goes.
Okay.
So there are various ideas of that kind of way in which, and it doesn't seem to me surprising to acknowledge that our circumstances affect what we're free to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, it seems very clear to me that the incidence of both same-sex attraction and of gender identity has radically changed in the last 10 years. You know, people are much, much more willing at school, for example, to admit they're same-sex attracted because it's not nearly so frightening as it once used to be.
Right, we've opened as a society.
It seems to me like it. I would have thought it was just a biological. I thought people would typically not have any choice in it. It would just be a biological thing that was your preference. You know, you're just born with it.
No, I think not, because I think the difficulty is that there's a fair degree of bisexuality in most people. You know, there's an element of it, and so particularly at the stage of when people are, you know, being shaped in their teens as to what or who they're attracted to, there's a lot of ambivalence because women mature earlier than men.
Mm.
And if you're in a same-sex school, you know, there's all sorts of things that happen, and inevitably there's going to be a bit of exploration.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think there is a bit of pliability around sexual identity. And it's funny because nobody has ever identified the gay gene, you know, the so-called gay gene.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm like, yeah, like, it's a grey little zone. But then you think about, this is a strange comparison, but you think about kind of like psychopaths. Apparently, you know, they'll have moments in their life that sort of turn them, but then you wonder if you put them in like a nurturing family at a young age, whether or not they would turn out to be a psychopath.
Oh, and I would...
And I assume human brains are pretty pliable in a weird way, so it's a dangerous thing to like, just the word conversion is gnarly.
Yes, and they're pliable more at an early stage. And I mean, most people, I think, would agree, but I'm not a clinician, that at this the shaping of gender identity comes before puberty.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, people who are same-sex attracted almost always tell stories of looking back and being called names at schools long before it could have been, you know, a possibility.
Right. I guess where it gets really interesting, especially if you're a parent, is you're supposed to be the protector and the chooser of right and wrong for them, and you're setting them out for a society, so you have a particular sort of framework in mind. And, you know, you have to make these decisions because this person's not old enough, but when it comes to these things, it's very different, right? So...
Well, this is going to be the very challenging aspect of the law, and the early critics have very quickly picked up that that's a delicate issue, that, in fact, the parents are the most likely ones to be held accountable in this language.
Right.
Yeah, let me just read you a little bit from the law.
Okay.
It is not, the draft law, it's not a defence to a charge under Section 8 or 9, that the individual on whom the conversion practice was performed or a person on behalf of that individual consented to the performance of that practice or that the person believed that such consent was given. So this makes it very tricky where parents, in fact, can offer no defence. And yet parents may well have, and we know, I mean, historically, you know, every parent is dreaming about their grandchildren.
Mm.
Probably.
Yeah,
and
right.
So there's powerful nervousness operating almost throughout society to this day, I guess. You know, that you're going to deprive me of the children grandchildren I desperately want to have.
Mm.
And I think that's the kind of emotive area where there will be most hostility to this. I mean, it's a very odd thing because it's strange that the law has called it conversion practice, the draft law, not conversion therapy, but conversion practice. Actually, what they're describing is not conversion at all, unless it's gender conversion, you know, or sexuality conversion. It's actually sort of sexual identity therapy, if you like. Mm-hmm. But it's just somehow been called conversion therapy. Then the law, then this draft law has tried to avoid the phrase but still come up with conversion practices, which is just likely to create fury in certain areas of and certain types of churches, you can imagine.
Can you lay out what a conversion therapy or whatever, what that would consist of, like a normal program, program, but you know what I mean, like if it was to exist, what would...
And the law does try to define this, and whether it's gone too narrowly or too broadly.
Like, is it six easy steps, like 1995 type shit? Or?
Yes. Well, so I mean, at heart, it's producing some kind of psychological and possibly, you know, religious framework to try and reprogram the mind of a person so that they identify differently than that which they might naturally identify with.
It is a bit of a brainwash then, because I'm expecting this to be a rapid situation. Here's where my head's going. You go to a place, you go into a room, there's a chair in the middle of the room, they shut the door, you know, and then it's just fucking all sorts of flashing images and shit, you know, like, what are the actual nuts and bolts of a situation? Do you know?
Yeah, so, well, there are various different versions of this. But, I mean, I've been looking up the website of the New Zealander best known for doing something like this, and this is David Riddell of the Living Wisdom School of Counselling.
And tied to a particular church?
He doesn't claim to have a particular church,
okay,
but it would be on the Pentecostal side.
Mm-hmm.
And he stoutly defends that he would never go as far as forcing anybody. Of course, what he can't force them. All he can offer is some kind of way to make them think that they have overcome their gender identity.
That would be as good as a result, right? Because then you could just tick it off and go, man, that was another win.
Well, the ideal result, and I've known people in the past who've tried very hard to get this, is that they will start desiring to have sex with the opposite sex.
Right.
And in general, they rarely get to that point. They usually get to the point where they can tolerate it. But then you're caught in the paradox that such religious groups aren't going to really encourage you to have sex with anybody anyway.
It's not sustainable anyway, if you can, you know, that's...
Well, it's not sustainable, and, I mean, to be honest, the usual conversion therapy of the people that I've known in the LGBT world has been administered by themselves, to themselves, by trying to have sex with the opposite sex. And, I mean, in many cases, getting married, and almost invariably those marriages end in disaster, which is really sad.
Yeah.
Because now, it's messy for the kids.
Why does the church have a strong interest in conversion therapy? Is it just the classic, you'll go to hell if you're a homosexual?
That is a fucking classic, eh?
But that is the kind of logic. Mm. But it's interesting that, I mean, quite a lot... In New Zealand, it's hard to find many churches who will express it strongly today. And it's also intriguing that the law itself says... The expression, I quote, this is the draft law, the expression only of a religious principle or a belief made to an individual that is not intended to change or suppress the individual's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression, that's not a conversion practice.
Mm.
Mm.
So evidently it is fine to say, I don't believe you should, I don't believe it's proper, I don't believe it's right for people to change their gender or to be homosexually oriented. But the therapy must come about when the person is offered a course that offers this as an outcome.
Okay, that's when it's defined as like, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. So what do we expect to see popping up? Some sort of underground ritualistic things in the bush?
Oh, I think, yeah, I'm sure it will happen. To be honest, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, right. No, look that's exactly, when things are outlawed, that's what happens. I mean, that's a human nature,
I
really.
I cannot imagine that this will stop it, but it will, perhaps driving it into the bush, as long as the prohibition is well known, will give the person who's being pushed into this a defence. Incidentally...
We'll make it harder to find as well, which is good.
That's right. Incidentally, they make a difference between the under 18-year-olds and with people over the age of 18.
Right.
So...
Well, under 18 is where it starts getting... You're in a very sketchy area there, you know, like...
Do you think making conversion therapy illegal will make parents more accepting of their children's sexuality?
On the broader spectrum, yeah, for everyone in New
Zealand. I think this is part, along with the new school regulations that have been drafted and that are into play, which allows for gender-neutral toilets and... for, you know, affirmation of sexual exploration. I think all of these things are going to allow much, much more freedom.
Awesome.
In development, but I think there'll be a massive subterranean shift against it.
Okay.
You imagine the religious schools and how they're going to handle this.
Yeah, but then I think about religion, how it's kind of adapting with modern society when it comes to homosexuality and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So it's weird that, it feels long overdue, really.
Well, it is, but I think we're going to see more and more, you know, quite a sharp shift in the character of types of religion that are kind of contemporary in their approach.
Yeah.
And the fundamentalists who will actually do pretty well in this society. Because there's quite a lot of people who want a very determined, clear, straightforward, right and wrong type of society. And these regulations don't provide it.
Fair enough.
Nor should they.
Hey, nice one, Peter. Another gnarly topic.
But very good.
Enjoyable chat. Thank you very much.
See you later.
We'll catch you next week.
Bye.